Boone knew the Indian character well. He knew that the savages would probably kill them if they were troublesome or disagreeable, and so he acted as if he were well pleased with his new life. His friend followed his example, and when the Indians found that the prisoners could march just as far as they themselves could, that they could go as long without food, always appeared contented, and never tried to get away, they thought them very brave fellows, and did not watch them so closely. On the seventh night after they had been made prisoners, Boone saw that they were unwatched. While all the Indians were sleeping, he roused his companion, and seizing their rifles, the two stole away. When the Indians awoke next morning, their former prisoners were already far on their way toward the old lodge. Through rain, mud, and pools of standing water, George Rogers Clark's gallant followers started to traverse what is now the state of Illinois. The first stream was crossed by means of trees felled for the purpose. Beyond this river, the road stretched away over a partly submerged plain. Clark was anxious to keep up the spirits and courage of his men, and with that end in view, planned that the evening should be times of feasting and merrymaking. Each day, one company was supplied with horses and given permission to hunt along the line of march. The men at night prepared the game they were able to secure and invited their comrades to share it with them. Many buffaloes, some deer, and waterfowl in this way supplemented the provisions carried by the pack horses. This diversion helped the men along their toilsome way until they reached the Little Wabash River. Clark acted as if he were enjoying himself, and indeed he was, filled with satisfaction as he realized that the farther they advanced, the more impossible it became to retreat. Crockett had two opponents, Colonel Alexander and General Arnold. Each was more afraid of the other than of Crockett. On one occasion, all three had to make speeches. Crockett spoke first and made a short, witty speech. Colonel Alexander then made a long political speech. When Arnold spoke, he made no reference to Crockett's speech, but discussed all the points made by Alexander. While he was speaking, a flock of guinea fowls came near and made such a noise that he stopped and asked that they be driven away. When he had finished, Crockett went up to him and said in a loud voice, "Well, Colonel, I see you understand the language of fowls. You do not have the politeness to name me in your speech, and when my little friends the guinea fowls came up and began to holler, 'Crockett, Crockett, Crockett,' you were ungenerous enough to drive them away." This amused the spectators very much, and they went away laughing and talking about Crockett's cleverness, and all forgot the long speeches of the other candidates. On election day, Crockett was chosen by a large majority to represent 100,000 people. He was among the Rocky Mountains, trapping with a few comrades. At the close of a day's tramp, the little party went into camp. While the other men were preparing for the night, Carson started off to hunt. He was hungry, and small game did not suit his fancy. Pretty soon his practiced eye recognized some elk tracks. He followed them, and in a little while came in sight of a small herd not far from a clump of trees. He tried to gain the trees to shoot from that cover, but the elks were too alert. They discovered his approach and started. He leveled his gun and brought down one of the fleeing animals. With a feeling of satisfaction, he was running towards his prey when he was startled by the sound of crackling brush. He looked back and saw two huge grizzly bears rushing toward him. His gun was unloaded. What should he do? Kit Carson never took much time to make up his mind. He now stretched every nerve to reach the trees. "But bears can climb trees, you say?" "Yes, but it is always well to be above your enemy, and old grizzlies cannot climb very well." Lifelong practice had made him nimble as a deer. He reached the trees, caught a limb, and swung up into the branches while the bears were still at some distance. They were not running with steady swing now, but bounding forward with great leaps. In a moment they would reach the tree. Kit Carson drew his hunting knife and, working desperately, cut and trimmed a stout club in less time than it takes to tell it. The foremost bear started up the tree. Carson stood waiting in the fork of the tree. When the bear got near, he gave it a sharp rap on the nose, for he knew that a bear's nose is very tender. The bear gave a cry of pain and backed down the tree, shaking its head. Then the other tried it and was met with a blow of greater violence. He also retreated, and his brother tried again. Again he was driven back, roaring with pain. For some time the serious yet comical conflict was kept up. Then the great creatures lumbered off to console themselves with Carson's elk. It was a long time before he ventured from his tree. It was dark when he got to the camp, and the disappointed trappers were obliged to sup on the unpalatable beaver. Carson's story gave flavor to the poor supper, and no one else complained.